Hello again and welcome to Musings on Golf, where there are stories galore as we welcome in August, and a little bit later, we welcome in a woman who has been able to solicit some great stories herself from PGA Tour players, Amanda Renner of CBS Sports, who will be our special guest today. I'm Kelly Elbin along with Bob Bupka. Hey, Robert, this is a week of high drama on the PGA Tour as the 70 participants will be determined for the first event in the FedEx Cup playoffs. But before that, Bob, we have some breaking news. Tiger Woods has agreed to join the PGA Tour policy board as the sixth player director. This is big news, and there were also a group of 41 players who have an agreement, essentially, with the commissioner, Jay Monahan, that they're going to have a little larger voices, perhaps, going forward. I think this is fairly significant, Bob.
I do, too, and my immediate reaction, Kelly, was, Jay Monahan fell overboard, and he was in dire need of a life raft, and suddenly Tiger Woods appears. And Jay, certainly intelligent enough to know that he has Tiger on his side, it'll be a lot easier with the players. And I think Tiger's going to insist that it's transparency, that this is the players' tour, and no actions in the future will ever be taken without the players at least knowing what is going to be proposed.
And that's exactly what was written in the press release that was sent out this morning by the PGA Tour. Bob, I think this is a good thing. I can only imagine being a PGA Tour player and having felt really blindsided by the discussions that had been ongoing with this possible merger with LIV Golf and the Saudis. And rightfully so, Bob, ultimately, this is their organization, isn't it?
Absolutely. And, a lot of smokescreen with, well, it's not an agreement. This is just the framework. The players didn't want to hear any of that because, they were not consulted. They were not brought in to what was going to transpire at that meeting. And I think this is a good solution. Personally, anytime you have Tiger involved, it's going to be for the good.
In that release, he said, quote, "The players thank Commissioner Monahan for agreeing to address our concerns, and we look forward to being at the table with him to make the right decisions for the future of the game that we all love. He has my confidence moving forward with those changes." Those are significant. There's a little words, Bob, the players being at the table, but as you said, they have to be. There's way too much at stake, and there's still a lot of question as to, where all this is going forward. But I've got to imagine for Jay Monahan, at least to have some solidarity, from some of the best players in the game is what he needs in a lot of ways right now.
Yeah, absolutely. And, there's been rampant discussion about Jay Monahan stepping down from his position, maybe even being forced to step down. Now that he has solicited Tiger on his side, I think it's going to be a lot smoother waters. I did not envision this. I had some wild ideas that Tiger should become the commissioner, but then I said, there's no way he would want that job. I mean, another $5 million a year, not worth it for Tiger to devote any more time. So I think this is a path to the right conclusion. Doesn't mean it's going to be perfect. Doesn't mean, it's going to be silky smooth. But I believe it's certainly a step, a huge step in the right direction.
Yeah. Justin Thomas, as we all well know, is a good buddy of Tiger Woods. And in speaking this morning at his press conference at the Wyndham Championship in North Carolina, Justin had this to say about Tiger being the new member of the Tour Policy Board.
Obviously, his relationship with Arnold Palmer, Jack Nicklaus, and what they did to basically create the PGA Tour kind of what it is now, and we've been dealt with some some roadblocks, if you will, or just some difficult circumstances. And I think he takes it seriously that he is going to be a part of paving the way for the future and the current, I guess, I don't know if you want to call it structure or whatever, of the PGA Tour. And I think, you know, especially with him not playing as much now, I know he has a little bit more time than if he was playing a full season and full schedule. So he takes the future of the PGA Tour very seriously, and he wants it to be in the best hands possible and it to be in the best position possible. And I think it'd be very easy for someone like him, all he's done, just kind of, you know, what do I need to do? I've made the tour what it is, where it's at financially, all the sponsors, TV deals, whatever, and it'd be pretty easy for him to just hide under a rock the rest of his life and be just fine. But that's not who he is. He wants to continue to see the PGA Tour grow and succeed.
Well, Justin, I have to say that'd be a big rock if Tiger Woods could hide under it. But you know what I was thinking, listening to Justin, and he's such a good guy and such a great representative of what a tour pro should be. You know, this helps him coming into Wyndham, because Wyndham is a huge week for him. He needs to perform and perform very well just to make it into the playoffs. So instead of all the focus being on Justin coming to Wyndham, this provides ample distraction as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, I agree with that. The FedEx Cup playoffs are different this year, right? So you had, for many, many years, it was the low 20, 125 on the FedEx Cup point list got into the first event. Well, that's changed significantly. So only 70 will make it into the FedEx St. Jude Championship next week. And then it'll be trimmed to the top 50 who will advance to the BMW Championship. And then, as it has been really for all the years, the top 30 will then advance to the Tour Championship. And Bob, those are just some of the numbers. I mean, you've, in addition to Justin Thomas, Bob, you've got some really well-known major champions who are right now on the outside looking in, who desperately want to get back inside.
Oh, absolutely. And one that comes to mind right away is Shane Lowry. He's at 75th. So it certainly seems very feasible that he could advance five spots. And the funny thing about this, Kelly, as I see it, both Justin and let's say Shane, if they make it into that top 70, I wouldn't count them out on winning, you know, because once they get a little confidence built back, they'll go from that 70 and go down to the top, to make it into the top 50 at the BMW Championship, and then hopefully be in that final 30 at the Tour Championship. And with the talent that Shane Lowry and the talent Justin Thomas possess, they could surprise everybody.
Yeah, you also have Adam Scott in 81st place right now. And I think this is really good, obviously, for the Tour to have those guys playing in the event this week. It keeps interest, it builds interest. And a lot on the line. Hey, really happy for a guy who I really didn't know much about in Lee Hodges. Seven-shot victory at the 3M Championship last week, Bob, in Minnesota. Wire-to-wire winner. Really impressive guy. And huge for his career. I was, in a funny way, Bob, I was kind of equally impressed by JT Poston, two-time winner on the PGA Tour, who, with a three-shot advantage from second place to everybody else in third place, he decided, three shots down going to the last hole, he decided to go for the green and two on the par five. He wanted to win the golf tournament, which I think is fantastic, Bob. Unfortunately, he ended up making triple bogey, made eight, dropped back, and because of that, being solo second, tied for second, he essentially lost $260,000. That's a tough one, but I give him a lot of credit. It was a tough one to watch, but you know, we started this Bob's Best Stories last week, and I know that you were there for what still has to rank as the most amazing unraveling in the history of the game on the 18th hole of the 1999 Open Championship at Carnoustie with Jean Vandeveld of the Frenchman with a three-shot lead. And Bob, you were there on the 18th green, I believe. It has to be something that you literally will never forget.
Well, that was quite a week for me, Kelly, because I had become friends with John Vanderveld earlier in the week. Mm-hmm. And I remember on Sunday morning, there were a lot of pros and cons. Can he hold up? Can he not hold up? This was going to be huge, and I decided that he was going to hold up. So I made several bets with several members of the media, which is normal. However, what was not normal, when John was getting ready to go to the 18th, the people that I had bet with started paying me off. And stupid me, I took the money, and I had it in my pocket. And suddenly, when disaster started to hit, that money, I physically felt that money slipping out, and I didn't even mind the money, the humiliation that I had to give those media people back their money. I told John Vanderveld the story. He said, "Bob, I'll reimburse you." I said, "No, you know, I was foolish to bet on you, John, but I like you anyway."
And I don't know if he ever felt humiliated, but Bob, when he took his shoes off and went in the water, it was just like, it really became almost something out of a scripted movie. It was so implausible and so absurd. And then on top of everything else, Bob, as you know, he makes a lengthy putt for triple bogey to get into a playoff.
Yeah, absolutely. And the bright end to that story, John Vanderveld took it like a man. And there was no whining and groaning and all of that. And to be perfectly candid, for at least the first 6 months after that, or maybe even the first year, I felt John Vanderveld benefited more than Paul Lawrie that won the event. Everybody, because Vanderveld's attitude was so pristine that everybody wanted to talk to him. He was the biggest story. I mean, Paul Lawrie was almost lost in the shuffle.
Yeah, he was in a lot of ways. And Paul, you know, didn't necessarily go on to do anything specifically great after that in his career. And Vanderveld, as you said, a good man. Hey, so Bob, a lot on the line this week again. And our guest today, who you hear from in just a minute, Amanda Renner, in my opinion, has really transformed, Bob, that post-round interview, which really was a kind of a staid thing for years and years of asking a couple questions and then the player moved on. Now it's a sit-down. Now it's more comfortable. Now she's had John Rahm on the week after the Masters talking at length during the event at Hilton Head. This is, I think, the evolution of golf broadcasting in a great way. You know, we have TrackMan and all these things that, from a production standpoint, but the ability to talk to somebody and hear what an elite player has to say in more than just 30 seconds, I think it brings so much more to the overall telecast.
Well, Kelly, I have to agree with you. I think that's a perfect assessment of what CBS has in Amanda.
Yeah, it's a great point. So really looking forward to having you all hear from Amanda Renner of CBS Sports, and you'll hear from her right after this from Titleist.
The all-new Pro V1 and Pro V1X are designed to outperform. Created in Titleist R&D laboratories, manufactured in Titleist golf ball plants, and then validated by the best players in the world. These golf balls are longer and more consistent with unrivaled control. Outperform with the new Titleist Pro V1 and Pro V1X.
Welcome back to Musings on Golf. Bob, with the FedEx Cup playoffs set to start next week, with CBS Sports covering all three events, we're going to be seeing and hearing a whole lot from our special guest today. Through far greater engagement with players, she and CBS Sports have transformed the post-round interviews, and we as viewers are truly the beneficiary. Amanda Renner, welcome to Musings on Golf.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
Hi, Amanda. Bob Bupka here, and correct me if I'm wrong. I think the first time I had the pleasure of meeting you was down at Wells Fargo, and you were working for the PGA Tour at the time, and I was doing my thing, and we started to talk, and I realized right then what a talent you were. But then you said you went to Hofstra, and being a Long Island boy, I was really excited. And then I said, I'm going to tell you one thing. This girl's going to make it. Never did I dream you would make it as big as you have.
That's so nice. I remember us having that conversation. Anytime I can talk a little Hofstra, Long Island, New York, it's not often that you run into people who know exactly where that is in the golf world. So I remember that vividly.
Yeah, Amanda, that gets Bob Bupka's attention every time. Anytime there's mention of Long Island, he perks up immediately.
As do I.
Amanda, let me ask you this. The FedEx Cup playoffs begin in a week at the FedEx St. Jude Championship in Memphis. What other storylines will be this week at the Wyndham Championship? How does the 2023 FedEx Cup playoffs differ from previous years in format?
Yeah, you know, it's so interesting. One, we are so excited to be presenting the FedEx Cup playoffs in its entirety on CBS for the first time. And I think it's an amazing timing for that, considering all the changes that are happening. And I think it's just going to create even more drama than we've ever seen before. I mean, you know, you think about the Wyndham Championship, and usually that's the tournament that guys are fighting on that bubble to get inside that top 125, right? That 125, here's your PGA Tour card, nothing's changed with that. But it also ensured that you moved into the FedEx Cup playoffs, and you knew that even if you were 125, you still could have, you know, hit a hot streak and make it all the way to the Tour Championship, and who knows what could happen from there. Well, this season, obviously, that's very different. Now it's top 70 will advance. And what's happening because of that is it's creating more drama leading into the playoffs, right? We're seeing huge names like Justin Thomas tee it up at tournaments that we wouldn't normally see him at the end of a regular season. You're starting to see guys play a little bit more at the end, fighting to make it into that top 70. So it's creating more drama earlier, which is really fun to watch. And then, of course, from there, it's going to feel much more cutthroat for those final three events. And, you know, Memphis is such a wonderful city. It's an incredible golf course. I know we talk about it. We kind of joke about it every year. How it's the most balls in the water all season long happening at Memphis. And you will hear that once again, I'm sure, from us. But, you know, it's a dramatic golf course. It's a dramatic setup now, even more so with fewer players making it into the playoffs. And I cannot wait to see what happens. But to me, I think the thing that I hadn't expected, which we are starting to see, is that drama happening earlier, because players that aren't used to seeing themselves outside that bubble, all of a sudden are saying, oh, no. I got to make a couple more starts here that I wouldn't usually make, and let's see what happens.
You know, Amanda, the one thing that impresses me about your work is how comfortable you make the players that you're interviewing. You know, the media and interviews and whatnot, it's a necessary evil for the players. It comes as part of the job, but you have the ability to get them to relax, and as a result, you get real heartfelt answers, as far as I'm concerned.
I appreciate that. I always joke, listen, I've been torturing these guys since 2011, you know, my days at PGAtour.com. So I think the comfort level and the trust that I have intentionally built with these players, I do think it's that repetition, it's that comfortability, it's that understanding that when those guys come and sit down with me, if I do have to ask them something difficult, I try my very hardest not to make it a gotcha moment, right? I feel very firmly that you can ask hard questions without being a huge jerk about it, right? And being a jerk about it might give you some street cred and, oh, you know, what a tough guy or person, you know, that, you know, they're being. But what that's really doing is destroying any sense of trust with that player who, by the way, you're going to be interviewing for probably the next 10 or 15 years, right? So I would say I rarely ever feel like, you know, let's shy away from something. I always think we're going to ask about it, but I do think there's a respectful way. There is a human way of asking about it, which generally allows them to feel a little bit more open and not feel attacked and give a more insightful answer than maybe otherwise would have been given.
Yeah, so there's a real balance for you, isn't there, in terms of being prepared and being ready, and but keeping those, frankly, keeping those relationships intact, and also entertaining the viewer at the same time, right?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, absolutely. You know, I think about the things that you can't avoid that viewers want to know the answer to, right? Having to talk to Scottie Scheffler about his putting woes, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you were talking about number one player in the world, some of the best ball striking we've ever seen, period, in the game.
Yeah.
And yet his putting is really wrong. And I gave him a heads up before we talked, and I said, hey, just so you know, I'm not bashing you at all, but we got to talk about what's going on with your putting. And it gave him 10, 15 seconds to gather himself. And really, truly, in that moment, give me an idea of if he was even open to it or not, right? Because if you get two questions with a player and you know that player isn't going to give you anything, is that really the smartest use of your time for the viewers watching at home who want to get some insight from these players? So it's certainly a balance. And sometimes, listen, you have to ask a question that you know you're not going to get anything out of, but it's your job to ask the question. And you know, it's the player or the coach's job to answer it as they see fit. But I would say most of the time, you're really trying to balance that. Hey, how am I going to get the most out of this player in this short amount of time that's going to give us insight not only to what's going on in their game right now, but where their head's at for the next day or for the rest of the season, or give some perspective that maybe otherwise we would not have had the time to get from them. So all of that is certainly a part of the balance.
Yeah, Amanda Renner of CBS Sports joining us here on Musings on Golf. I mentioned at the outset in regards to really what has been a transformative approach that you and CBS Sports have taken to these post-round interviews, where you, instead of that 30 seconds with somebody, you sit, you talk. And I would certainly imagine that the John Rahm time, I believe it was at Hilton Head after the week of the Masters, after he won, where he spent an extensive period of time talking with you and sort of analyzing the play that was going on. In terms of that whole approach, Amanda, was that something that had taken to the higher-ups at CBS? What was sort of the collaborative effort that's led to what's really a cool presentation now for us as viewers?
You know, our recording producer, Seller Sky, was actually the first one who thought of this. And if you remember back a couple PGA championships ago, Vito Pereira obviously leading the way, trying to do something pretty unprecedented in terms of a rookie winning for the first time and it's a major championship. And his best friend, Joaquin Niemann, is watching every step of the way. And at Sellers, all credit to him, he said, I want to interview Joaquin and have him stay and have him talk about watching his best friend try to do something pretty historic. And I don't think any of us really knew how it was going to work, right? We threw the headsets on so all the announcers could talk to Joaquin. We hadn't really, you know, we're super comfortable with Joaquin, but there's no telling how he's going to be, right, in a chair for longer than just a couple of minutes interview talking about himself. Now we're asking him to talk about somebody else, which hasn't been done before. And he was phenomenal. And I think it was then that we kind of realized, okay, there's something here. And there's also a number of players that are really interested, I think, in this broadcasting side of the game. You know, hey, once I'm done playing, is this something that I might want to think about? Justin Thomas, I'll never forget walking with him at the mat, right? And he was a walking reporter. And he was like a Hall of Famer right away, right? Everyone was blown away by how great he was talking trash with Charles Barkley. He's in there reading Tiger Woods. It was an unbelievable moment for a top player in the world to showcase that he's multidimensional in that way. And you see all these things, you're like, okay, there's something here. And it's not just for us, but these players are kind of into it too. John Rahm and I talked about it for a couple of days, and obviously he was exhausted and rightfully so coming off his win at the Masters. And he said, if the timing works out, I'll do this with you on Sunday. We said, okay. And, you know, no real pressure. This would be cool. And we were blown away by him. I think the whole golf world was blown away by him.
Yeah.
you understand that he loves the game of golf, but I don't think we really understood what that meant until we saw it in action, right? He knew, he knows about every guy's game. He's making historical references off, you know, off the top of his head. He is such a, he's obsessed, right? He is, and here's what he said, I'm addicted to the game. He never wants to leave it. And when he is off the golf course, he's still thinking about it. And we got to see that obsession in a really fun way. And then, of course, he joined us again at the PGA Championship. And it's just getting to know those players in a way that we've never gotten to see them, I think, is one of the coolest things that, you know, Seller Sky and our technical and production team has given us the opportunity to do.
Yeah, and so speaking to that last point in regards to getting to know the players, is that that's what you're doing there is part of really that that evolution where you see a guy like Michael Block, who nobody knew, and then he's on with ESPN in the first round at the PGA Championship, then he's on with you guys while he's playing. So now the on-course, that element, well, that's really a radically different look than what golf watchers have been used to for a long time. I've got to imagine that's a lot of fun and kind of energizes you guys as a broadcast team.
It's amazing. I'll never forget our entire crew going dead silent, or, you know, when Max Homa agreed to be the first one to test this out. Mm. And I mean, just fist pumping, like we had just won Super Bowl after it happened. And of course he goes on to win. And you realize, like, holy cow, there's a whole nother dimension here that we can take this inside the ropes to. You know, I think that was something that the viewers have been craving for so long. And I think as broadcasters, you're always trying to innovate and think about how can we present the game in a different way. And once again, none of that happens without our production team behind the scenes working tirelessly, not only coming up with the ideas, but coming up with solutions, right, on how to effortlessly do it so players don't immediately say no. And then working in tandem with the PGA Tour to say, hey, guys, are you down to do something like this? And all credit to them for saying yes, right? There's in golf, it seems like we're constantly fighting the status quo versus trying to do new things, but not wanting to disrupt so much of what makes golf great and also predictable, right? That predictability, there's something to that. But so disrupting that, you're taking a huge chance there that this doesn't work and you're messing up, you know, someone in the middle of a pretty pivotal moment. The fact that Max Homa agreed to do it, then goes on to win that weekend, seeing technology work effortlessly and just seeing everyone come together to make it better, to make the product and the game better, is really one of the cooler things that I've been able to witness.
Yeah, I know Bob wants to talk to you about your time at Callaway Golf, but before that time and after you got out of Hofstra. And I know you started playing golf when you were, I think, like 9 years old. Yeah. You worked for the PGA Tour. That was your launch into golf. And I'm wondering, was a career in broadcasting in golf, was that something that you had pursued, or did it just sort of evolve that way after going, you know, I mean, you covered high school sports right out of college. Did golf, was it high on the radar, or did you just sort of get there?
No, it wasn't even on the radar, which was like the ultimate I told you so moment for my mom and dad, who had, you know, made me take lessons when I was little. And I always talk about how I think I would have loved golf a lot more if the programs that are available now were available when I was growing up, right? And when I was growing up, taking lessons was in the dead heat of summer by yourself, no other kids around, wearing uncomfortable clothing that I didn't want to wear. You know, it just, nothing about it was fun for me. I wanted to be an only child. I think I really craved being around other kids and being in a team environment. And that just wasn't on the table for the game of golf, you know, when I was growing up. So I had no inkling at all that the golf would be a part of my future. I was so dead set on doing literally any other sport, football specifically. And when I graduated from Hofstra and I'd interned for the New York Jets, I'd interned for the New York Islanders, I had been working for the MSG Network, doing their high school game of the week for lacrosse and Verizon Fire Channel 1. I was all over the place, right, in the tri-state area, doing everything but golf. And as things happen, and I always give this advice to anybody who is super passionate about pursuing a career that's difficult to make it in, you have to be open to things that maybe were not a part of your original plan. And I had a family friend, Noah Kozlov. He worked forever in the New York area, baseball and beyond. And he said, hey, the PGA Tour is actually looking for an in-house reporter. What do you say about going down for an interview? If I put in your demo reel, I said, well, I'll go down there. You know, I was a poor 20-something living in New York City, and it was creepy, the snow on the ground, and I'm kind of looking at the free trip to Florida to get out of all that sadness for a little bit.
Yeah.
And I got down there and really fell in love with this idea that, man, I get to write and produce my own show. And they were very willing to teach me the game of golf. I was super honest that I knew really nothing about PGA Tour players or PGA Tour golf, even though I grew up on a golf course. And the PGA Tour was amazing. They said, we love the way that you present. We like the way that you can produce. And we'll teach you the game. And what ended up, what I thought was going to be a very short stop into the game of golf to help transition me into professional sports, ended up being the thing that I have built my career around. And now with CBS, I'm also covering NFL. So, you know, it's a very circuitous route, but, you know, a decade plus later, I actually have my dream job plus this other dream that I could have never even thought about, but it's taken me to places I will forever be grateful.
Amanda, you know, many coaches, collegiate level, professional level, they're all known for trying to give that fire-up speech before the game starts. I got to believe, and you correct me if I'm wrong, you get energized when you hear Jim Nance say, now let's go to Amanda. I mean, golly. I mean, that's like the Pope giving you a blessing.
I mean, I know I should be embarrassed to admit this, but I'm not. It took me a solid year to stop giggling every time Jim said my name. Because I was like, how is this real life? That Jim, first of all, that I can tell Jim Nance a colleague. And secondly, he knows my name. Like, the whole thing is so outrageous to me, especially coming from a place where I had pretty much quit my dream of broadcasting. You know, I'd been with the tour for 5 years. No one would hire me. I was basically being told I wasn't good enough. And I left for a marketing job with Callaway. So, like, I really let go of the dream and was in the middle of reinventing myself and what my new life was going to look like and finding new passions and all that stuff. And all of a sudden, it, like, literally almost happened overnight that Jim Nance is a colleague of mine, and I'm getting to live this dream with the best announced team in sports. I mean, I still get kind of like, I'm getting butterflies right now. My stomach was talking about it. It's just so, it is surreal, but it also is just such an amazing reminder that, you know, if you work as hard as you possibly can for as long as you possibly can, you might not end up where you thought you were, but something really good is going to happen. I firmly believe that. And this was beyond my wildest dreams, but yes, it is, still a pretty surreal moment to say that I have Jim Nance's. You see those videos where it's like, who's the most famous person in your phone? Jim Nance is the most famous person in my phone, and it will never get old.
Amanda, let me ask you, does your husband play golf?
Oh my goodness, does he play golf? The former quarterback, unbelievable athlete, and he left coaching right just before we got married, and he has been playing a lot of golf. We live in Diego. We have our local cars for Tory Pines. And so on weekends, he plays 36 holes while I'm talking about golf. And he is an unbelievable golfer now. It's actually embarrassing. I was afraid. How much golf has he been playing from golf? Because this is, you know, he's down to low single digit handicap and has that, you know, 6'4", 230 build, has all that power. It's unbelievable to watch him play, but I also have questions about how he's doing so much golf time. So I'll be talking to him later.
So does he have to, when he finishes the round now, does he have to come back home and tell you about it?
The interview? Do you have a post-round interview?
Pretty early on in our relationship, I could not care less what he scores on the golf course. He tries to talk to me. One good shot. I'm like, Bryn, I promise you, babe, I am so impressed by a lot of what you've accomplished, but golf is never going to impress me when you come home. So, please stop crying. We will not talk about it.
Well, we're on the deep into the back nine with Amanda Renner of CBS Sports here on Musings on Golf. So we know about your husband's ability on the golf course, and now I got some good stuff here. A mutual friend of ours told me about your viewing interests, and I understand, of all things, Amanda Renner, you are a huge fan of the Golden Girls. Is that correct? The Golden Girls.
Betty White, man. Yes. Yeah. It's like, oh my God, it's just like a cozy blanket. Every time the Golden Girls are on, I feel like I can feel my entire nervous system just calm down within 5 minutes. It's like the same thing for Hallmark movies, same thing for watching dog shows. That's what reality television. There are certain things that I need. Disconnect and go mm-hmm. one of them.
Did you have a favorite, or do you have a favorite character among the great ladies from that fabulous sitcom?
I mean, obviously Betty White is like, we can't. Yeah. Blanche. Come on. Yeah. So thank you, Mallory Crossland, for throwing my secret viewing pleasures under the bus for everyone.
That is our mutual friend, Mallory Crossland, my dear friend at the PGA of America. Hey, one other thing before I turn it back over to Bob, and I know this is really dear to you, and that's your involvement with puppies and golf. Can you kind of explain what is puppies and golf and why does it mean so much to you?
Yeah, so thanks for asking. It's my foundation that I founded in 2020, and it's kind of been a long time coming. But we have three central pillars, and the first one is to bring awareness and to provide grants for shelters and rescues across the country. And so every month we promote a different shelter and provide them with a grant to help them towards their most immediate needs. And then we also feature a dog that has been in their care for a very long time to help bring extra awareness to get them adopted. Our second pillar is to provide grants for families that have unexpected medical costs for their dogs, because that's one of the big reasons dogs get dumped at shelters is something happens, there's a high medical bill, they can't afford it, and instead of trying to find a solution, they get dumped at the shelter. So we work with vets and hospitals across the country to provide grants to families who are in need. And then our third pillar is to provide funding and awareness to organizations that train service dogs for our military veterans. So that's one near and dear to my heart. I was an active volunteer at Canines for Warriors when I lived in Jacksonville, Florida. I still work closely with them and helping them with some of their programs. And also we always dedicate a minimum of $30,000 donations to them every year. So that's what we do. We're trying to save all the dogs and help, trying to make everyone's lives better through all the benefits of having a dog, trying to kind of connect those two through the world of golf.
Amanda, let me ask you this. We not only get to see you now as part of golf coverage, which we enjoy tremendously, it's quite a kick to see you on the sidelines at an NFL game. How much do you enjoy that?
Oh, I mean, it's the best, right? That was my dream growing up. But, you're born in Pittsburgh, and the joke is you're wrapped in a terrible towel when you leave the hospital. So, some of my youngest memories are, being at the old Three River Stadium, watching Steelers games with my parents, and, walking on my couch, or, walking on our couch with our grandparents and our whole family. And football is very much my first love. So to be able to be a part of, NFL and CBS coverage is another one of those surreal moments. But just you kind of take a step back and you're like, man, how lucky and how grateful am I to be able to live out my dream? And it's one of the best things ever. So right after the playoffs end, CBS has been great. They'll give me a couple weeks off and then I'll be back starting week three. I think they already announced it. Colts at Ravens, and we'll get that part of life underway, which is a very different type of adrenaline, but it is just the absolute best.
I'm going to ask you to say goodbye to Amanda because I don't want to. I've enjoyed this too much, but you have to wrap it up.
Yeah, and obviously you've got the FedEx Cup playoffs coming up. You've got another NFL season to go. As Amanda Renner, as you kind of look back, though, based on your years now at CBS since, 2017, what's been for you? Has there been, like, a coolest moment, like a, wow, this interview was off the charts, or this particular moment was just the coolest? Anything stand out?
Yeah, I mean, maybe it's recency bias, but I really don't think so. Watching Nick Taylor win the Canadian Open this year, being there the way he won it, right? A 72-foot eagle putt, watching a bunch of the guys from Europe come down to try to rally Tommy Fleetwood, because Shane Lowry looking at me, he's like, this feels like a Ryder Cup. Our boy is seriously outnumbered. Like, they were all standing there behind the green following. You know, you had Mike Weir down there. You had all of these Adam Hadwin, like the Canadians, none of them were leaving. The European guys are down there. Not one person, I'm telling, there were thousands of people following from hole to hole. It's raining. It's like so dramatic. I really felt like we're in a movie scene. And then he makes that 72-foot eagle putt. The place erupts in a way like I have never seen, aside from a major. Champagne's being, you know, sprayed everywhere. Adam Hadwin's being tackled by security guards. It's pure madness on the green. It felt like a football game. And you just realize how much this game means to that country. And to watch one of their own finally win it again, I'm getting goosebumps talking about it. It was genuinely one of the most surreal moments I have ever been right in the middle of. And it was absolutely incredible. And I think that memory, that moment was replayed for a lot of years. And to have those moments in a non-major, I think, is really special and it's meaningful. And now it's going to stick with me for a long time.
Well, that is very cool. And you've given us a lot to celebrate. We thank you very much for your time here on Musings on Golf. Amanda Renner, best of luck going forward with the FedEx Cup on CBS Sports this year and the NFL. And we look forward to seeing you down the road. Thanks again.
Oh, thank you so much for having me, guys. We'll talk soon.
Really enjoyed it. Thanks.
Go, go Hofstra.
When you make the best performing golf balls in the world, your biggest competition is yourself. And now the golf ball that sets the standard for every other has raised the bar again. New Titleist Pro V1 and Pro V1X are longer and more consistent with unrivaled control. Outperform with new Pro V1 and Pro V1X. Titleist, the number one ball in golf.
Bob, Amanda's really impressive, and to think that she really, when she joined the PGA Tour, she really didn't know the game of golf that well, but she was willing to learn. I think anytime you're given an opportunity, Bob, if you go at it and take full advantage of it, which she did, it can lead to the person and the knowledgeable person you see and hear today.
Yeah, and I think she's a perfect example of never settle. Here's Amanda, gets to work for the PGA Tour.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of people would say, man, I made it. That's it. I don't want to go any higher. And yet she jumped at the opportunity to move to CBS. And look what that's brought her. So congratulations, Amanda.
Yeah, we thank Amanda Renner of CBS Sports for joining us. And next week, Dwayne Bach, who's done a terrific job caddying for Sepp Straka with a victory at the John Deere and a tie for second at the Open Championship, will be with Bob and me for the next Musings on Golf. For Bob Bupka, Kelly Elbin, thanks for joining us.